The build-up of negative auric vibrations initially impairs our ability to perceive psychically, he continued to elucidate. If these energies build up over a long period of time, they can eventually cause us to become physically ill. Most serious illnesses, including many types of cancer, are the result of auric toxicity. Master Fuap went on to explain that the secret knowledge of enlightenment is like a flame. He said the first people to become enlightened in Atlantis had, in effect, lit the flame of enlightenment on Earth for the first time. The members of the various mystery schools of spiritual and psychic development had kept that flame of enlightenment alive by preserving and passing on, from generation to generation, the secret techniques for attaining enlightenment, from the time of Atlantis to our present day. He said the Ray Quartz Fuas was the most recent Tibetan incarnation of the mystery schools of the past. Master Fuap also informed me that during the Atlantean cycle, the Earth's aura, the invisible astral energy field that surrounds and protects our planet and through which all psychic perception flows, was very pure. He compared the Earth's aura to its ozone layer. The Earth's ozone layer, Master Fuap continued, is an invisible shield that protects human beings and other living things from the sun's ultraviolet radiation. If the Earth's ozone layer ever becomes severely depleted, most plant and animal life on our planet will perish. In a similar way, all living things have an aura, a rapidly vibrating, invisible psychic energy field that protects them from toxic, non-physical energies that would otherwise be detrimental to them. During the Age of Atlantis, there were only several hundred thousand people living on our planet. They lived in a sublime state of harmony with nature. At that time, because of the purity of the Earth's aura, it was much easier to meditate, to be in touch with the spiritual side of your being, and to become enlightened. Think of it this way, Master Fuap continued. If you want to hear music on the radio, you simply have to tune into a station and listen to what is playing. But if hundreds and thousands of stations were all jamming the airwaves at the same time, you wouldn't be able to hear any of them. Even if they were all playing the most beautiful music, you would only hear a dissonant white noise coming out of your radio. Every living being is psychic, he exclaimed. Whether or not we are consciously aware of it, we all feel vibrations and energies coming to us from other people all of the time. We feel these things with our aura, the outermost layer of our subtle bodies. Did you know that the vast majority of the thoughts you think and the emotions you feel aren't even your own? Master Fuap asked with a wry smile on his face. As I mentioned to you before, he reminded me, you pick up most of your thoughts and emotions psychically, from the people you are physically near, and also from people for whom you have strong positive or negative emotional feelings. In addition, you also pick up psychic impressions from where you work or go to school, the roads you drive on, the stores you shop in, the city and the country you live in, and, to a certain extent, from all the people who live on our very crowded planet. Well, let us suppose that you live next to an alcoholic. You might suddenly find yourself wanting to drink. If you follow that feeling, which was not yours to begin with, you might start to drink on a regular basis. Then, in an intoxicated haze, you might neglect your work, get mad at the people you care about, or even get into a car accident. In short, if you followed the feelings of the alcoholic next door, without realizing they weren't your own feelings, you could ruin your entire life. Or let us say, Master Fuap continued, that you love someone who is very depressed. Even though that person may live in a different part of the country from you, you may find yourself thinking and feeling that person's unhappy thoughts and depressed emotions, even though you might be a very happy person. Psychic impressions can also remain in a physical location for some time. If a newly married couple who were very happy with each other moved into a home just vacated by a couple whose marriage had ended in divorce, the newlyweds might find themselves fighting with each other all the time, even though they really loved one another. Without either of them consciously realizing it, the newlyweds could easily pick up the thought forms of the previous tenants of the house, assume these were their own thoughts and feelings, and act upon them. In addition to the vibratory effect that individuals who are physically near can have upon us, Master Fuap explained, and the even stronger effect that people to whom we are emotionally close have, we are also affected by the collective consciousness of all of humanity's vibrations. You see, every person's mind acts like a radio transmitter. It constantly transmits the essence of their thoughts and emotions into the Earth's aura. Now that the Earth's population has grown well into the billions, there are so many people's thought forms psychically flooding the Earth's aura that it has become highly toxic. Because of this psychic pollution of the Earth's aura, it has become very difficult even for individuals with a highly developed psychic facility to perceive things clearly. It might be easier for you to understand what I am talking about if you were to try an experiment, Master Fuap said. Observe how many thoughts you think when you are around other people. Then go for a walk in the woods, on an empty beach, in the desert or on a mountain. When you perform this experiment, try not to walk on a trail or beach that people tend to walk on or visit frequently. As I mentioned before, a certain amount of a person's thought forms are left in the physical locations that the person frequents. Instead, try walking on a trail or a beach that is not as well worn, or depart from the trail to a pure spot where no one has recently been, and spend a few minutes there by yourself. After you have spent 10 or 20 minutes in a relatively pure spot, Master Fuap continued, observe your mind. You will probably notice that you are neither thinking as much as you were before, nor are you thinking the same types of thoughts that you were earlier, when other people were around you. This change in the quantity and quality of your thoughts has occurred because you have physically distanced yourself from others, and also because the natural elements in the forests, mountains, deserts, and near oceans and other large bodies of water help shield you from the thought forms and auras of other human beings. Master Fuap, I still don't understand how all this relates to my question, I said impatiently. Why couldn't the members of the Mystery School who died during the destruction of Atlantis, or afterwards in their boats, simply reincarnate, go into their other memories, and recall everything they had known in Atlantis? You should be able to answer that question for yourself, now that I have explained how the aura works, Master Fuap replied. I don't know. It's too confusing. Would you please explain it to me in a simpler way? Master Fuap smiled sympathetically. It's easy to understand. Just put all the facts that I have given you together. During the Age of Atlantis, he said, the low population density, and the resulting purity of the Earth's aura, made conditions ideal for discovering the secret meditation techniques for the first time. But the destruction of Atlantis happened to coincide with an overall rise in the population of other less technically and spiritually evolved civilizations on the Earth. So by the time the Egyptian civilization had begun to flourish, Master Fuap continued to explain, the Earth's aura had already become so dense that it was impossible to discover the secret meditation techniques, as had been done so easily in the auric purity of the first age of Atlantis. This was the primary reason the Mystery School was formed. The first members of the order, during the time of Atlantis, had psychically seen the subsequent ages of auric darkness that the Earth was going to lapse into. They knew that the vibratory toxicity of these subsequent ages would make it impossible for reincarnating members of the order to go deeply enough into their other memories, and recall what they had known in Atlantis, without knowing the secret techniques first. So, I inquired, they needed the secret techniques to jumpstart their other memories, and someone had to be around who knew the secret techniques to teach the reincarnating members of the order how to use them after they were reborn into a new incarnation. Is that the idea, Master Fuap? Exactly. That is why there must always be at least one member of the order on Earth to orally pass the techniques on to others who have recently reincarnated. Then, by employing the secret techniques, newly incarnated members, or whoever the techniques may be taught to, can go ahead and access their other memories, and recall everything from their past lives for themselves. Master Fuap, how did all this work in Atlantis? Were children born just knowing all of this because the aura of the Earth was so pure? In Atlantis, Master Fuap responded, children who were spiritually evolved from meditative practices in their previous lives were brought to the mystery schools for training by the older members of the order who psychically recognized them. At the Temple of Atlantis, the high priests and priestesses taught the children the secret meditation techniques, along with methods and ways of living that would increase their pranic levels and help them develop their psychic skills. The mystery schools continued to perform this service throughout the greater Egyptian civilization, which, as I mentioned before, was the second age of humankind and later, on into the third age of humankind, when the Indian, Chinese, Japanese and Tibetan high cultures flourished. But the tremendous increase in the world's population during the third age has made meditation and psychic perception, things that should be easy and come naturally to spiritually evolved people, difficult to practice and participate in. All the billions of people who now inhabit our planet are putting a terrific strain not only on the Earth's natural resources, but also on its aura, making it difficult, if not impossible, even for evolved people to become aware of their past life knowledge and talents. You must understand that enlightenment, Master Fuap continued, is a perfect state of mind. When you are enlightened, you hear and feel ecstasy, the music of the universe, all the time. Ecstasy is always present, but we are usually so psychically blocked up by our thoughts, our negative emotions, our ego's machinations and the auras of others that we are completely unaware of it. Instead of feeling the innately enlightened and ecstatic nature of all things, we tend to get caught up in our thoughts, emotions and in the idiotic and idiosyncratic dramas that make up our day-to-day lives. To become enlightened, it is necessary to still your thoughts and emotions, and become empty, Master Fuap said calmly. This is the beginning of true meditation, to empty your mind of distracting ideas, feelings and ways of looking at things, which we in the Buddhist order refer to as illusions, and instead allow your awareness to roam through the dimensions and planes of higher light that exist deep within your mind. This is one of the goals of higher Buddhist yoga. Master Fuap told me that in 1950 the communist Chinese had unexpectedly invaded Tibet, massacred hundreds of thousands of Tibetan Buddhist monks, and destroyed or desecrated the Tibetan monasteries. All the living members of the Raycourt's Fuas, with the exception of Master Fuap, who had managed to escape to safety in Nepal, were either executed or worked to death in Chinese forced labor camps. So, for the first time in the history of the order, there was only one member left alive, Master Fuap. He alone had the full knowledge of the secret tantric techniques for rapidly attaining enlightenment. Chapter 10, Master Fuap's Shastradup's Prophetic Dream. Master Fuap told me that his own master, Fuap's Shastradup, had made a significant prophecy to him about the future of the order before the Chinese invasion of Tibet had taken place. One day, when he and Master Fuap were out hiking in the Himalayas, Fuap's Shastradup told Master Fuap about a prophetic dream he had dreamt the night before. He told Master Fuap that in his dream he had seen a time in the future when Master Fuap was going to be the only living member of the Raycourt's Fuas left on the earth. In his dream he had seen Master Fuap, the last living member of the order, traveling in the Himalayas looking for a student to transmit the secret techniques to. He told Master Fuap that toward the end of his dream he had seen a tall, skinny, young man with pale skin flying down a mountain and bumping into Master Fuap. He said that this particular young man would come from a country in the west, and that he would become Master Fuap's apprentice. He also told Master Fuap that he had seen in his dream that this new apprentice would learn the secret meditation techniques from Master Fuap, and then transmit them in a new way in a new land. As a result of this, he said, the order was going to move its main teaching facilities from the east to the west. In addition, he told Master Fuap that from the time of the 1990s forward, the meditation techniques of the Raycourt's Fuas, which up until that time had been the closely guarded secret of the members of the order, would be transmitted to millions of young students all over the world. Master Fuap then told me enthusiastically that he would teach me, starting the next day at noon, the secret techniques and doctrines of the Raycourt's Fuas. He said that once I had learned the secret techniques, methods and philosophy of Tantric Buddhism from him, it would then be my karma to return to the West, practice the techniques for many years until I had perfected them myself, and then transmit them to the students of the world. While Master Fuap and I had been busy conversing about enlightenment and the history of the mystery schools, the afternoon had come and gone, and it had grown cold and dark outside. Master Fuap told me that I had heard enough for one day. He advised me to return to the hostel, to eat well and get some rest, and then come back the next day at noon to his temple for further conversation about meditation and enlightenment. As I was walking back to the hostel, a very cold wind blew against my body and it began to snow. My skin tingled as the particles of blowing snow hit my face. As I walked, I drew my parka as tightly around my body as I could. In what seemed like no time at all, I reached the hostel and entered into its warmth and shelter. After taking off my coat, I washed, had dinner, and slept through the night without having any dreams at all. Chapter 11, An Enlightening Cup of Tea. I returned to Master Fuap's temple the next day at noon, as he had suggested. Once again Master Fuap met me at the temple door and guided me back to his quarters. We sat on the yak hair rug in his room, as we had the day before. But this time the table between us had a teapot and two empty teacups on it. "I have invited you for tea today," Master Fuap began. "I enjoy drinking tea several times a day. In fact, tea is my favorite drink. Do you like tea?" I told him I did. He then proceeded to pour us each a steaming cup of hot tea from his teapot. I thought that it might be too hot to drink, but upon tasting it I was pleased to discover that it wasn't. "Today I am going to teach you about enlightenment," Master Fuap announced loudly, as if there were other people in the room whom he wanted to make aware of what he was saying. "But before I do, I would like to answer the question that I know you are just burning to ask me." He paused for a moment and sipped his tea. I reflected for a moment. If I had a particular question on my mind that I wanted to ask Master Fuap, I was certainly not conscious of it. However, after a few more moments of silence, a question occurred to me. "Master Fuap," I began, "I don't understand any of this. I came to Nepal to snowboard the Himalayas, not to learn about enlightenment and the secret teachings of your Buddhist order. I don't mean to complain, but are you sure you have the right guy here?" Master Fuap smiled at me and didn't say a word. Then he closed his eyes. Several minutes passed and he still didn't respond to me as I sat on the yak hair rug in Master Fuap's small, clean and comfortable room. A very strange thing began to occur. The air in the room began to thicken and turn a beautiful, bright, golden color, not all at once, but very gradually. At first I thought it was snowing golden light around Master Fuap. I noticed the phenomenon first around his head, then the golden light seemed to spread all around his body, and finally it filled up the entire room. Seeing the golden light surrounding Master Fuap's body, my first thought was that something must have happened to my vision. I rubbed my eyes with both of my hands in an attempt to clear my sight, but it didn't make the slightest bit of difference. The color of the air around Master Fuap and in the room remained a soft and beautiful gold. As I watched in amazement, the golden light that was filling the room became even thicker. After a few more minutes, I could barely see Master Fuap at all, even though he was sitting directly across the table from me. Then I felt my entire body beginning to tingle with a prickly heat. It wasn't an entirely unpleasant sensation, just unusual. I lost consciousness of the passage of time. Master Fuap and I could have been sitting in his room for 5 minutes or 5 hours, I couldn't tell the difference. I did notice, however, that my mind had become clear, composed and relaxed. In fact, I felt very good, probably better than I had ever felt before in my life. As timeless time passed, another awareness began to overtake me. Without any apparent effort on my part, I suddenly understood everything. Not that there was anything in particular to understand, I suddenly just knew all about life. I realized that I was one with life, and at the same time a separate and unique part of it. It was then that I first knew Master Fuap was enlightened. Somehow I could feel inside of his mind, and I knew it was made up of the pure golden light. I also knew, without knowing how I knew, that the golden light in Master Fuap's mind, and the golden light that was currently filling up his room, was the light of enlightenment. I could sense that Master Fuap's mind stretched out endlessly in every direction, throughout all time, space and dimensionality. I had never felt or experienced anything that was so incredibly beautiful before. Then Master Fuap spoke to me in a soothing tone of voice. He didn't open his eyes as he spoke. He talked about enlightenment. As he spoke to me, the waves of golden light continued to emanate from his body in a seemingly endless variety of kaleidoscopic patterns. I noticed at times there was a steady flow of soft golden light coming directly from his body, and at other times it seemed to pulse rhythmically throughout the room, in time with his speech patterns. Enlightenment, he began, is the complete awareness of life, without any mental modifications. It is happiness, ecstasy and all that is beautiful, perfect and fulfilling in life. Enlightenment, he continued, is a perfect state of mind. It is the direct seeing of reality. The world most people see, which they call life, is really just a dream. Just as the events in a dream have an apparent solidity while you are dreaming them, so also day-to-day life seems solid and real while you are experiencing it. But when a day, an experience or a feeling has passed, it loses its apparent solidity, just as the events in a dream lose their sense of reality after you have awakened from them. The world you experience every day and night of your life is transient. You, the person who experiences all of this, the people you know, have known or will one day know, the feelings and experiences you have had, are having now, or will have one day in the future, all of these things, times, places, people, experiences, understandings, feelings and events, are transient. They last only for the blink of an eye, and then they dissolve back into that unknowable and formless eternity from which all things come, and to which all things eventually must return. But behind this transient reality that comes and goes so swiftly, there is something else. It is a deeper, more permanent and unchanging reality that we Buddhists call Nirvana. Nirvana is the intelligent light that makes us and everything that we experience, from birth to death and from death to rebirth. It is also the same light that makes up everything that is beyond the cycle of birth, death and rebirth. It is wonderful beyond knowing. It creates all of the transient worlds, and the beings that inhabit them, out of itself. It sustains them, transforms them, and eventually draws them back into itself again. And yet, while the beings it creates will experience the pleasures and pains and the successes and failures of existence, it remains aloof from them. It is untouched by their happiness or unhappiness. Nirvana is a state of perpetual bliss and ecstasy, unaffected by the transient ups and downs of its own creations. Tantric Buddhist yoga is a pathway a person can follow to enlightenment. Through the tantric practices you can unite your consciousness with the eternal bliss and ecstasy of nirvana and rise above the limited conditions of pleasure and pain, success and failure, happiness and sorrow, that all of the countless unenlightened beings in creation are slaves to. If you want to constantly experience the unalloyed ecstasy of life, you must first break contact with the things that cause you pain. You can accomplish this through the twin Buddhist practices of meditation and mindfulness. In meditation, by fully focusing your mind on your chakras, stilling your thoughts, and increasing your kundalini flow, you can rise above your body consciousness and unite your mind with the clear light of nirvana. This establishes a flow of bliss and happiness between your mind and enlightenment. With the happiness, ecstasy and power you gain from meditation, you can then gradually remove your mind from the things it has become hooked to that cause it pain. Once you have accomplished this, regardless of what happens to you in your physical life, you will always be happy. When you draw your happiness each day from the endless awareness of nirvana, Master Fuap continued, you are no longer a slave to fortune. When pleasant experiences come your way, you can enjoy them. But if pain and misfortune befall you, you can rise above them and remain unaffected. The bliss and ecstasy of nirvana will lift you far above the transient sorrows of both life and death. Try thinking of it this way, Master Fuap said. Above the clouds, the sun is always shining. Today, if it is a cloudy day, we cannot enjoy the sunshine and feel as much of its warmth as we could on a sunny day. But if you and I were to get into a jet plane and fly high above the clouds, there would only be sunshine. It is always sunny above the clouds. In much the same way, if you derive your happiness from the events, sensations and other experiences that you have in this physical world, and from the emotions and feelings they generate within your mind and body, you are a slave to the weather of events. When things are sunny in your life, you will be happy. But on cloudy days, which we all have in life, you will be sad, depressed and in pain. As you know, we cannot control the weather. As a matter of fact, we can hardly predict it. It is the same with day-to-day life. It is very hard to control life even some of the time, let alone most or all of the time, and it is almost impossible to predict life. But after you have united your mind with Nirvana in deepest meditation, you will always be in an enlightened state of consciousness. Then let the clouds of life come. Let the rain of unhappy and tragic experiences fall, as sometimes it inevitably must, even in the lives of enlightened masters. If your mind has become one with Nirvana, through the practice of meditation and mindfulness, you will remain happy at all times. But Master Fuap, I found myself asking, how do people who meditate feel during the period of time before they become enlightened? Are they as unhappy and do they still suffer as much as other unenlightened people, or are they better able to deal with what you refer? Master Fuap opened his eyes and looked directly at me. These are good questions. He laughed. Naturally, it takes quite a bit of time to become enlightened. But it is really not so different from learning any other art. All you need is time, a good teacher and practice. When you first begin to meditate, you should not expect too much too soon. The first day you start studying a foreign language, you don't expect to speak it, do you? But even after only several weeks of practicing meditation, you will begin to have more energy, and be a little bit happier. Gradually, as your meditation practice improves, you will experience even greater happiness and have more internal energy at your disposal. Eventually, as you further improve your meditation practice, you will experience ecstasy in knowledge that is beyond the power of words to describe. Each time you meditate, you create a stronger connection with the world of inner light and happiness that exists within you, Master Fuap explained. Over the course of many years of practice, that connection will become brighter and more ecstatic. But even from the very beginning of your meditation practice, you will notice that some of the brightness and ecstasy you experience during meditation will enter into your day-to-day life. Remember, Master Fuap said in a mock tone of warning, as your meditation practice improves from month to month, more and more light and ecstasy will spill over into the moments of your daily life. Eventually, a time will come when you will always exist, as I do, in a state of continual light. Master Fuap, if all you learn from a master are the secret meditation techniques, why would you need to continue to study with a master once you have learned the techniques from him? I inquired. You will need correction, direction, and most of all, you will need your master's auric empowerment, Master Fuap quickly explained. If you have electricity in the wires of your house, he continued, you only have to plug a lamp in to make it work. The current is already there for you to use. But if you only have a small hand-powered generator to light a lamp, then you will only have light when you turn the crank of the hand generator. When you stop, the light will fade and go out. An enlightened master is a perpetual source of the cosmic light because his mind is always merged with Nirvana. If you are a student of an enlightened master, then you can literally tap into his aura, the field of light that comes through him, anywhere and at any time. All you have to do is meditate on your Buddhist master and the light will come into your mind. An enlightened Buddhist master provides his students with auric empowerment. He literally transfers light, power and knowledge into their auras. This empowerment gives his students an extraordinary amount of prana. This increased amount of prana enables them to meditate more deeply, and to accomplish other things in their lives more rapidly and with greater happiness and ease. Naturally, this is not the case for most people who meditate, he continued. In this whole world, there are actually very few people who study meditation with an enlightened master. That is because there are not very many enlightened masters on the entire earth.